Well, let's talk to Bruce Williamson. He's from the campaign group Rail Future and joins us now. Good morning to you, Bruce.
Good morning, Julia.
As I said to Steve Headley, I'm in two minds on this, because it seems to me that the way that the rail service was privatised, with this ridiculous franchise system and the way that they're sort of profit proofed, a lot of them, they get the money no matter what, no matter how bad the service is. It seems to me to be a darned inefficient way of running any sort of service, whether private or public sector. But is renationalising it the answer? Will that provide us with a better system?
I'm not sure it will. It certainly, it would be popular if you look at, you know, the opinion polls consistently. The public favour renationalisation, and I think what they see, and possibly slightly wrongly, is sort of fat cat train operating companies providing a poor service and making massive profits. They don't make massive profits. They make a small profit, but they run a fairly tight ship. But, you know, the government, you may have heard recently, they're sort of saying, well, 97 pence in the pound goes back to investment. Well, you know, wouldn't it be better to have 100 pence in the pound going back into reinvestment? The bottom line is, of course, that, you know, whichever way you have it, the government are holding the purse strings. And rail fares are controlled by the government. And the railways are subsidised by the government. So, I think nationalisation isn't a magic bullet.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. We do hear, though, about how good the services are in a lot of mainland Europe. I mean, if anyone's been on the French railways, the German railways, all very efficient and clean. Japan, and much further afield, all very good. But these are massively subsidised. You get cheaper rail fares, very nice trains and services, but they are massively subsidised by the state. But are they more subsidised than our railway is?
I think, by and large, they are. I mean, you get what you pay for, don't you? Just going back to, you know, privatisation, another factor that's worth mentioning, of course, is because you have so many different private sector bodies involved in the railway, that creates a huge tangled web of admin and complexity. And I think there's an admin cost associated with that. So clearly, if you have just one organisation running the whole thing, I think you get sort of efficiencies and economies of scale there. But yeah, basically, the government are trying to subsidise the railways less and less in this country by making the rail passenger pay more and more. So it's horses for courses. You pays your money and takes your choice, really.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Because the fuss really always seems to be in the beginning of January or in December. I remember discussing this before I went on my Christmas hauls. We knew that the rail fares were going to go up by 3.5% on average, some more, some less, and then everyone was going to be up in arms, and everyone is. But people don't seem to mind if their taxes end up going up to subsidise this rail fares. And we've learned in the last couple of days that actually the people who were getting these commuter rail tickets that end up going up in price so much, they largely are people who are higher earners. A lot of people who commute a long way are people who've on a decent earning, decent wages. They often work in a big city like London or say Manchester or Birmingham, and they live out in the lovely, either the leafy suburbs or,
Julia,
or further
out. Are you talking
out.
About yourself there?
No, I'm not. I live in central London, mate. I couldn't, the thought of spending more than half an hour commuting every day would absolutely kill me. I couldn't do it. But this is the thing. I don't expect someone to subsidise my lifestyle. So why do people who can afford to live miles from work, they go, oh, I'm spending £3,000 a year on my rail fares. And I'm thinking, yeah, but that's your choice. But you get to live in a much bigger, nicer home than people who don't commute.
Yeah, but I don't think that's always the case. I think there are also examples of people who simply can't afford to live near to their work or vice versa and just have to travel or have to move out of the cities in order to find affordable housing. And I think we have to look at the bigger picture as well. I mean, London's a great example, because if you can imagine London without the railways and without the tube, it would simply grind to a halt. So I think we need to look at the bigger picture of how rail, and you can include freight in this as well, how rail contributes to the oiling the wheels of the economy. And I think it has a huge payback. You know, a country with a decent rail network it will be economically successful.
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Everybody who gets who moves out of a major city and commutes in is someone who's not competing to buy property in that city, and therefore that will cut stop up. try and halt those house price rises. Everyone who's on the roads isn't on the railways with, you know, their armpit in your face. Everyone, but everyone on the railways or on the bus, they aren't on the roads in the car. We all kind of muddle along helping each other, but there does seem to be this emphasis on subsidising people on the people who get railways as good people and sort of punishing the drivers as bad people.
Well, I mean, I would obviously, being a sort of rail campaigner, stand up for rail as being environmentally friendly, and it is. You know, electric trains pollute not at all, and, you know, if they're using wind power or whatever, then even the power that generates the trains is not polluting. So, you know, there are real advantages in and trains are safer as well. There are real advantages in sort of encouraging people to get on public transport and out of their private cars. And also, I think, you know, you talk about punishing drivers, but actually it's the poor old rail passenger who's been punished, because for 7 years on the trot now, or maybe eight, I can't remember, 2010 was the last time that fuel duty for motorists went up. So it's been frozen for that period. But in that same period, rail fares have gone up 30%. So, I mean, if you're talking about punishing or rewarding, surely it should be fair for both rail passengers and car drivers, not punishing one and treating the other with kid gloves.
Indeed. So if the railways were renationalised, even if it was under the Corbyn plan, which is a very slow thing where you'd basically buying, you know, not buying, but just taking back the franchises, so it would probably take, you know, a couple of decades to get them back in, would commuters see any difference?
I think they would see very little, actually. I mean, we've already experienced this because, of course, East Coast lapsed into nationalisation for a relatively short period, and it did very well, and the customer satisfaction was very good. So clearly, it's doable. And, you know, what would happen, it would be the same trains, it would be the same staff operating the trains and so on, and it would just be a sort of gradual shift into public ownership. It's doable, but it's a case of ideology, really. You know, the Tories love privatisation for ideological reasons, and likewise, Jeremy Corbyn and his supporters, for ideological reasons, want to renationalise the railway. But actually, you know, you wouldn't see much difference, I think.
Oh, same old, eh? Bruce Williamson from the campaign group Rail Future. Thank you very much indeed. Appreciate it.